Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome aboard. My name is John Cataldo, and I'll be pinch hitting this evening for Peter Schiff. Peter is actually, as we speak, on his way to Singapore to take place in the Asia Mining Conference, and terrific honor for Peter. He was invited over there, and they're going to pay for the whole shebang. So he is en route and probably 5 hours on his way on a 16-hour flight. So we wish him well over there. But in any event, today is March the 22nd, and I guess we're about to take on our version of March Madness in the Wall Street world and the world of, avoiding the dollar and getting out of what we consider a very, very troubling situation here. A bit about myself, actually, and let me give out the numbers again. This is a call-in program, so we invite your calls, and I'm going to mix it up a little bit. The toll-free number is 888-678-9597. And I do have the switch ready, and the phone lines are open, and I will welcome your calls to make my transition a little bit easier. This will be my first show. As far as myself, I run the Phoenix branch for Euro Pacific, and we've got four brokers besides myself in this office. I also help administrate the West Coast operations, which means I'm also helping the Newport Beach office as well. Let me give out the numbers here. I'm going to go ahead and steal the thunder for my guys out here in the West Coast. The number here for my branch is 1-800-727-6435. And that is the Valley of the Sun or the Phoenix branch office. We also have our office still up and running and doing very well in Newport Beach. The number there is 1-800-993-8350. And we do have brokers available this evening. So if you do have questions or if there's anything on the show that did spark your interest, feel free to give us a call, and we'd love to chat with people. This is exactly what we do. As far as a couple of just a couple of comments and some appearances that are coming up for Peter as well as the firm, 1 week from today, while Peter is over in Singapore, he's going to be a guest host on Bloomberg Asia. We're working on exactly the time, but it's going to be almost exactly 1 week from today, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be an hour before this broadcast, roughly, I guess, 7 o'clock Eastern. What we're going to do is we'll try to firm that up a little bit, but it should be exciting, and I'm almost positive Peter will be in studio there in Bloomberg Asia. The offices are right there in Singapore, so when we get a few more details to that effect, I will make those available. A couple more notes, as Peter reminds you quite often, we're doing the Money Show in Las Vegas on May the 15th through the 18th, and that, in my opinion, I do quite a bit of these shows for Peter and for the firm. It's always one of the best. It's one of the most attended. It seems like we get some of the best presenters at these shows in the Las Vegas show. And most importantly for people, it's a very fun place to go that appears as a nice write-off for your tax guy. So it kind of solves all those purposes. But for some strange reason, Las Vegas being Las Vegas, it's always the most attended show. And it seems like people get the most out of that show. So that's May the 15th through the 18th. And it looks like we're off to a quick start here. I've got a couple callers on. Looks like we've got John from Texas. Go ahead, John. First caller.
Hello, good evening. I had a question about gold.
Yes.
Just as Mr. Schiff believes, I believe that dollars will be produced faster than gold can. But I guess my question is, relating to the supply and demand dynamics for industrial purposes. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, on industrial purposes, we've always, you know, we certainly have always looked at gold more from a safety standpoint. I know that silver, there's a lot of arguments to the effect that silver is the metal that is used more for industrial, and there's more concern about people, I guess, using too much silver and the supply of silver not being there. But as far as gold goes, I think Peter is a little bit better to speak on gold as far as an investment, as far as intrinsic value being the only real store of value beyond these fiat currencies. We look at gold from that respect, but as far as industrial use for gold, again, I don't know that there is a lot of industrial use for gold out there.
Okay, great. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and again, and I know this is one of those areas where, you know, industrial-wise, I think people on this show and people who certainly are concerned about the dollar, and that's why we do what we do. You know, gold for them is a little bit of a different type of animal, I guess.
Okay, great. That answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think there's some areas tonight where you'll hear a little bit more about the areas that I and my guys specialize in. I think you'll enjoy a little different angle tonight. But gold's one of those areas where I think Peter does a much better job, I think, on those kind of questions. So I apologize.
Oh, no, not a problem at all. Thank you now.
Well, thank you for the call, John.
Bye-bye now.
I appreciate it. It looks like we've got one more. We've got also Mike on from Texas. Go ahead, Mike. Oh, no, okay, it looks like we lost Mike from the queue. So in any event, thank you for the early calls, and I do appreciate them. I'm sure I'll have some things to say that are going to open up some very interesting discussion. Some of the things I want to talk about are a little bit more investment related, or I want to maybe explain a little bit further about the types of positions, how we differ from, let's say, a mutual fund around the world, ADRs, which are a very popular investment for a lot of people. There are just some reasons why I think what we do is a lot different, and that if you truly want to avoid the U.S. dollar and get away from the U.S., I think what I'll have to say tonight I think will make a lot of sense. So, where I was just about finishing, I just wanted to make a couple more announcements. From last week, Peter was on CNBC. It was very early, I think, for some of our West Coast people. That's now on the website, so you can see that archived. He was on CNBC with another spirited debate about the savings rate in the country. And, you know, I hate to use a difficult word, but he said his competitor was kind of an idiot in the fact that some of the things he talked about just didn't register. But that you can now get on our website. If you go to our website, which is loaded with lots of information about new stories, economic commentary. Looking at the site today, I would say it's the best list of articles that we've had in some time. I know that there's a talk, there's an article about silver breaking to a new 22-year high. There's an article about the situation at Microsoft today. There's also, at the very bottom of our homepage, an article about Warren Buffett and his stance on the dollar, which we certainly know where that is. Warren Buffett does a very nice job of not narrowing down a timeline, but basically his comment is the dollar will have to be lower. He doesn't want to make a bet on when, but it's one of those situations where we like Warren Buffett's stance in that he doesn't have to give a time frame, and I think he's deserved that respect. Let's see if there's anything else that I've omitted from the from the original agenda. One more comment before I get into some of the economic announcements for the last week and economic indicators that were released. Next week, Peter will also be away, and what I'm going to do is bring in Axel Merck, who is the manager of the Merck Hard Currency Fund. He's going to be the guest on the show next Wednesday. I'll probably bring him in for about 30 minutes to do between segment or between the first and second break. And Axel has been around a long, long time on Wall Street. In fact, he's done a lot of things overseas. If you go to our website, there's some information about his fund, the Merck Hard Currency Fund. But it's a wonderful way if you want to be away from the dollar, but you don't feel like equities are the right way to go. This is a product where he diversifies in short-term instruments in the euro, in the Canadian dollar, in the Swiss franc, and there's also a percentage of gold, and it's about 8%. I think by law, you can only have so much of a percentage of a non-interest-bearing investment, and that's what gold represents. But he's going to be the guest on the show next Wednesday, and again, this is a person that is on a first-name basis with Stephen Roach, who's one of our heroes with Morgan Stanley. He's one of the only gentlemen at a mainstream firm who tells it like it is and really gets behind the kind of things that we believe. But Axel will be available and on the show next week, and we'll be taking questions as well. And if you want a little bit more information on the Merck Hard Currency Fund, you can go to our website, and there is a link there for the Merck Fund, and you can go in and click on that. But another wonderful product that we bring to the table, and again, this is one of these things where if you want to find out if this is the type of product that's appropriate for you, feel free to give any of our guys a call. We are, as Peter mentions from time to time, we are a full-service brokerage firm, meaning that if you believe what we believe, but you're just not sure if this is the type of maybe the type of arrangement you're looking for, or if you don't think that equities are appropriate or stocks are appropriate for you, but you're concerned about the dollar, give us a call. And again, that's what we really encourage. Unlike a lot of other people who believe what we believe and who I think want to get you away from the dollar, those are hedge funds, a lot of times just general mutual funds. But it's tough to find a firm like ours where you can actually talk to a live broker and work consistently with the broker and have them help develop a strategy that's right for you. And that's important because in this day and age where a lot of people do things online and they really need someone to talk to, our firm is very good at listening and making sure we can, I would say, mold something to fit the exact person or the appropriate person. So we do a wonderful job of doing that. So as far as economic, and I started this off saying that we're going through our own version of March Madness here at in the markets, but we've had a week ago on, I believe on Tuesday, and then Wednesday we had another number. We had our current account deficit and our trade deficit numbers that came out, which were just off the charts. These were numbers that we're now annualizing about $900 billion in terms of the trade deficit, and those numbers are just, they're unsustainable. I don't care if you're a fundamental analyst, if you're someone who wants to stay invested in the U.S., these are numbers that now are starting to get astronomical. The exact number was $224.9 billion in the fourth quarter. So again, you times that by four, you're looking at now a $900 billion number, which is enormous. And then coinciding with that, on Wednesday of last week, and Peter touched on this a little bit, but on March the 15th, we released they call it the tick flows, but it's basically the amount of net foreign purchases of our debt. And those numbers were $66 billion in the month of January. So in the month of January, we actually had a $68.5 billion trade deficit, but we only brought in $66 billion of foreign capital. So that's a $2.5 billion difference, which basically means that we have to subsidize or we have to fund this by finding an additional $2.5 billion from somewhere else. All of this has to be funded by foreign investment, and if those numbers continue to go that direction and we have net foreign purchases that continue to drop, as this deficit number rises, let's say we get to 70, 75, and those numbers keep dropping from 66 down to 60, that gap and that difference is enormous. And those are the kind of things that we are scared to death about, and some of the reasons why at Euro Pacific, we feel like investors have to pay attention to this, and more important than that, they have to at least have some percentage of what they have outside of the dollar. These are numbers that are scary, that continue to get worse and worse. Later that week, or later last week, we had the building permits number, which did come out on Thursday of last week, which was a little bit stronger than expectations. I think it was 2.145 million was the number, and that was actually a little higher than the estimate, but still down from the $2.2 million estimate, and this is for the month of February. So again, the continuing trend that building permits, which are the forward look at housing, those are numbers that continue to slip a little bit further. And that number again was out Thursday. Not the most important number. The CPI number also came out on that day, and the core CPI as well as the headline number. No surprise there. These are numbers that, and I'm a big believer. Peter talks about this. I believe some of these numbers they can make them look however they want them to look. So I would, I always tell clients when I'm on the phone with them to figure out, look around them on a month-to-month basis, figure out what it costs you to live and the things that matter versus a year ago. I figure that my personal inflation numbers have probably gone up about 9% year over year, maybe a bit higher than that. So again, I don't have a lot of stake or take a lot of stake in the CPI, the core or the headline number, again, just because I think those numbers can be made to look however they want to look. So again, the CPI numbers I don't really think are a solid gauge of inflation in this country. We also had that same day we had housing starts, which same effect. We had 2.1 million starts in the month of February. That was expected at just over 2 million, so it was a little higher, but it was also down from the 2.3, which was announced in February. So once again, the trend for housing last week, and I know these are now 4 or 5 days old, but those came out on Thursday of last week. Also on Friday, we had some other numbers, capacity utilization, which also just about in line with expectations, industrial production and the Michigan sentiment, the preliminary numbers. So these are all numbers that I don't think they're the most important economically, but nonetheless, all numbers that continue to show, I'd say, a general softening of the economy. And I'll talk a little bit later on this show about where I think the Fed's going to stop, and I think most importantly, when the dollar's going to start to really feel some of the pain, and when we're going to see a lot of the unwinding from all the purchases of U.S. dollars here, and I'll go into that a little bit later. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and take the first break here and play a commercial spot, and we'll be right back after the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I am back. And once again, my name is John Catelfio, and I am sitting in for Peter Schiff. I run the Phoenix as well as the West Coast operations for Euro Pacific. Let me give out the numbers. This is a call-in show. I am taking a little different angle. I'm going to do a little bit more about talking about our specifics and some of the things that we do specifically from inside the offices. Peter does a wonderful job of reminding people about the macro situation, does a terrific job of really reminding you why we do what we do, and I think I'll do a nice job here summarizing some of the specifics. But let me give out the numbers. The number to call in is 888-678-9597, and that's if you have any questions as well. If you would like to talk to a broker, I'm going to, again, favor our West Coast offices here. The number for my branch here in Phoenix is 1-800-727-6435, and there are brokers here because I'm looking right at them in the office and available if you'd like to touch base or ask a few questions. But let me go ahead and start. I've got a couple of comments about again things that Peter really won't touch on. But as far as our staff goes, we're We're generally a group of people that have been around on Wall Street. If you look on our website and you take a look at the average age or the experience that we bring to the table, our average advisor is probably about 40, which means that we're people that have been around the block. I've been in the business just about as long as Peter, about 18 years, and I think that's important because we come to Euro Pacific as brokers, as managers, because I think we've all been out there in the mainstream. We've been with the bigger firms, the Merrill Lynch's. I've been with Smith Barney, some of the other big firms. And until you've, I think, been on that side of the fence and really understand economically how things look and then come to a Euro Pacific, I think it's important that you know, you have someone who's been on both sides because, again, I can't stress enough that a lot of you have probably listened to this show and thought about, well, whether I should make the call or not or whether I should give Euro Pacific a call. And I'd highly encourage it because I think we understand every individual, and I think that once you have a call with us and at least listen to the kinds of things and listen to the way that we want to help people, I guess, in some respects, I think you'll really appreciate the difference between us and a major Wall Street firm. We do not have minimums. So we're not, like I mentioned earlier, hedge funds, a lot of people who believe what we believe generally operate as hedge funds with very high minimums. There's a lot of ways, if you want to avoid the U.S. dollar, to do it, but most of them involve very large amounts of money, and a lot of the vehicles that these hedge funds or other people use are either too risky or they're too expensive, or a lot of them, it's tough to get in and out of these positions. When we build a portfolio of foreign investments, these are completely liquid, investable stocks that are just listed on other exchanges. So when we're buying something, say, in Australia or New Zealand, Singapore, any of these countries that we're involved in, we go direct and buy these on their exchange. So if clients for some reason need to reposition this or move out of that, it's just a sale and 3 days later the money is available. So again, we really encourage people to just give us a call and talk about your situation because I think a lot of people would be surprised that we're definitely an open door for a lot of people who probably think we're not. So I would again, I would encourage at least people to venture in and make the phone call. On that note, I've got a couple of a couple of questions I always get from investors who will call for the first time and start asking or inquiring about exactly what Euro Pacific does. And I would say the biggest two questions that come up. Number one is, well, I own a foreign mutual fund. Isn't that exactly what you guys do? And then the second question is, well, I do this through through ADRs, and those are called American Depository Receipts. And what those generally are large foreign corporations. I'd say Toyota, Nissan, those are good examples of large foreign corporations who have paid to have their stocks listed on the New York Stock Exchange. What that does is every U.S. investor then can buy those foreign corporations. But let me give you the differences between what we do and maybe what a mutual fund would cover or maybe what an ADR would cover. As far as mutual funds go, when we buy a position at Euro Pacific, our first goal, first and foremost, is to get out of the U.S. And that means to invest outside the U.S. And when we make the purchase of a security in another country, we convert into that local currency. So if we're buying something in, let's say, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, what we'll do is we'll go to that local exchange and you will own it in that local currency. When you buy a mutual fund, a lot of times they're going to be full of individual stocks that do a lot of business with the U.S. For example, Samsung is a terrific name, and this is a company that you cannot buy on the U.S. exchange. It's not listed here. Everyone knows the electronics products that Samsung builds. But basically, Samsung is only listed in London, and it's listed in Korea. A lot of mutual funds own Samsung. The problem we have, and Samsung is one of those terrific companies, the problem we have with the Samsung, for example, is they sell way too much to the United States. And our overall concern lies with the fact that if the U.S. consumer is dead and runs out of money and the home equity extraction ends, we're concerned that we don't want to own companies that are going to be hurt by this. So we really, I'd say the best word that we use is we like to localize the investment. So for example, when we're going to a place, let's say Hong Kong, for example, we want to own a company in Hong Kong, and we consider that one of our terrific gateways to China. When we go to Hong Kong, we want to buy something where they're not exporting anything to the U.S. So if something happens in our country where the consumption stops and the U.S. consumer is out of cash and out of home equity extraction, this is a company that's not going to be affected. In fact, I'd say in a lot of cases, the worst that the U.S. does, a lot of times money will flee from the U.S. and find its way to a lot of these safer companies around the world. So when we're making these investments, we like things like utilities. We like real estate investment trusts, pipelines. There's a lot of these type companies around the world where they are very much localized. And that's important for us because, again, we really believe that part of the downfall, part of the fallout from the U.S. dollar's decline is that the U.S. consumer will not have the ability to continue to spend and borrow and spend, and that around the world, we want to be away from this trend, and we want to be invested in areas that are not going to be affected. So that's one of the main theses. And as far as the second part, the ADR question, ADRs, you can find, in some cases, you can find terrific companies that have paid the fees to come here to our country and list on the U.S. exchange or the U.S. exchanges. I would say the difference, and again, it's almost the same type of explanation, but ADRs typically are the largest foreign corporations, and by large meaning that they are also going to end up doing a lot of business here in the U.S. They're going to export a lot of stuff to this country, and so it really goes along the same lines that if you're invested in a large corporation that can afford to list here, generally they have a lot of exposure in the U.S. and they do quite a bit of business here. So those are just a couple of comments related to our investments. And if you own a mutual fund, there are some very good foreign mutual funds, but generally you're buying growth. So you're buying something that hopefully will go up 20% and the money manager will sell it and buy something else and so on and so on. It's the same trading approach that's gone on in this country for years. What we try to do is we try to get away from the U.S. and we try to collect dividends in much better currencies, in currencies where we're comfortable with the monetary policy of places that are doing a much better job of keeping their fiscal houses in order. So that's again, one of the main, I'd say, main differences in a lot of the questions that I get about, well, I already own this, I already own that, so there's no reason to take a look at Euro Pacific. But believe me, there are big differences, and our clients will tell you that this approach and not having to count on waking up early one morning and hoping that your company hits the earnings, these are not the things that our clients worry about. We're invested in businesses that will go on and will continue to perform in good times and bad times. We're really going after these defensive positions where we're looking for dividends, hopefully in better currencies that will rise, as well as hopefully getting a little bit of appreciation, or as money flows out of the U.S. and into these other countries, you know, we can capture all three of those things, which make our investments terrific, because in some cases, maybe one of those three will work. Maybe we'll get a little pullback in the value of the stock, but we'll have the dividends, and maybe we'll get a currency gain. So we'll have two of those three going in our favor. But again, this is just a little bit more about the specifics of the type of things that we look for and the type of things that we do for clients. I'd say a couple of specifics on some of our areas. And I know Peter talked about this last week, about energy and about some of our positions pulling back and creating a nice opportunity. And we like Canada. Canada is one of our favorite places to go to find dividends and to do them in resources like natural gas and crude that we feel are not as plentiful, and that over time, as demand continues to rise, are going to be great places to have money. And we don't want to take a lot of business risk, so we prefer the trusts up in Canada, again, because you're buying reserves of a company. And we like those kind of situations where we own the reserves, we know how many years of reserves are there, and so these are the kind of things where we'd like to start our investment based on those kind of concepts. But a couple of notes, because this will really speak a little more to our clients' Our clients are involved in natural gas and crude, and I want to talk about a couple of the areas that have pulled back a little bit and give you some thoughts on really what we're seeing or what I'm seeing. And like Peter, like our research team, we really like to dig in, especially when we see an opportunity or we see something going on where there's a shift in one of our areas. But natural gas specifically, I want to talk about that because what we've witnessed in natural gas is back in December when we had the fear that if we had a normal winter, not even an extreme winter, but a normal winter, that we were going to see a shortage of natural gas in the Northeast. And what ended up happening is we saw a spike in the price to, I think at one point, $15.70 was the high in December. And that's per MCF, per million cubic feet is how they measure natural gas. It was about $15.70. And where we are today is we're sitting just under $7. But really what's happened, and you can use any number or fill in any blank, but we've had the warmest winter in, you know, 5 years, 10 years. I think I've heard from a couple of CEOs in this business, maybe 300 years. But we've had the warmest winter in many, many years. And what that did to the price of natural gas, and this is a very strange, kind of rare occurrence, is you had natural gas prices come down from that $15.70 level, which was probably an overdone spike to the upside. Now down to the 6.5, I believe just below 6.5 in the last couple of weeks, and we're starting to see some firming up. But you know, when I speak to the CEOs of the companies that we work with and when I speak to other people in this business that are a lot smarter than I am, if that is the low, if after this kind of an extreme warm weather situation, if 6.5, 6.75, 7, those levels are the lowest we're going to go, we feel pretty comfortable that we're still in a very tight natural gas market, and that years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, we were at 50 cents, a dollar per MCF, a dollar 50. So still settling in at about 7 means that natural gas is still a very highly demanded commodity. And if you look at the last 15, 20 years in our country, all of the new power facilities, they're all natural gas facilities. 20 years ago, 15%, maybe 20% of the homes in this country had some form of natural gas in their home. That number's up to about 80% right now. So if you talk about one of the offsets of this housing frenzy that's gone on, it's that natural gas now is in more homes. And so that's one of those, I'd say, supply and demand situations where people just can't turn that off. So we're very comfortable. And what we use in this office, and this is another tool that we bring to the table, one of the brokers here in my office, Jason Farkas, is a very smart technical expert, and he practices the Elliott Wave Theory as well as the Austrian School of Economics. But as far as technical analysis, even from the Elliott Wave people, who, again, this is what they do, we at Euro Pacific take more of a fundamental look at the dollar, which scares the hell out of us. But as far as the technical side of the equation, which means if you look at a chart and you see a chart moving one direction, their take right now on natural gas is that when we got down to this level where we're down at 6.5, the 6.5 to 7 level, we were now in their, I think, their fifth wave, and these are terms that I'm not overly familiar with as far as Elliott Wave, but they saw a bottom of right around the $7 level in natural gas, and they're looking at an upside somewhere of around 10 to 10.5 over the next handful of months. They don't give specifics, but the way that they see it now, and they're looking for a significant rise in the price of natural gas. So again, something that Peter talked about last week was when we see pullbacks in some of the things that we like that you know, maybe fundamentally there was some reason why this company pulled back or that company pulled back. You know, our clients the whole time have been collecting dividends, so that's the other strength of our strategy. If the price will fluctuate, we still have dividends coming in on a month-to-month basis. But when you see this kind of opportunity in natural gas and you take a look at some of the things like this Elliott Wave and you take a look at how a lot of the excess supply of natural gas is working its way through the system, it gives you comfort to know that we have a nice opportunity in some of these trusts up in Toronto or up in Canada that have natural gas exposure. And as we get into the springtime, as we get into to the early summer, the problem with having a very warm winter means that the flip side of that is we could have a very warm summer. But worse than that, I think, and sorry for you folks down in the south there, but there could be another very bad hurricane season on the horizon. I think the water temperature has stayed pretty warm. So again, there's always a flip side to these kind of situations. So that's just one commodity, and I know our clients watched some terrific gains in these stocks in November, December, and January. And then in February, when a lot of this started to take place, we've had some pullbacks. But again, just know that at Euro Pacific, there's always somebody doing homework. We're always digging in and making sure that, especially if there's an opportunity, that we're going to go ahead and dig into it a little bit and make sure we're comfortable. But this is one of these situations that we feel very comfortable with. And if you're not a client of ours and you want to talk about that, or if you are an existing client and you want to talk about adding some money to any of these trusts that you have, especially ones that are a little more natural gas weighted, give your broker a call and discuss that with them, or give any of our guys a call, and they'd be more than happy to talk to you about the names that we like in those areas. I'll give you a couple more, and then I'm going to go to break. But a couple of more areas that, and I'm going to stick with the Elliott Wave. And again, these are chart or technical looks at different commodities, different currencies. As far as the euro and the U.S. dollar, and this, again, this is very different than something Peter would talk to you about, but too bad. This is my show, and I'm taking over. So, but anyway, as far as the euro and the U.S. dollar chart, the Elliott Wave people think that we're just about at a level where they said we could go a little bit lower on the euro versus the U.S. dollar. But once we get to a level where we've turned up now, we have a very large wave, and this will be measured over maybe months, maybe a little bit longer. But they're looking at something like 1.40, $1.40 or so on the euro-dollar relationship. We're sitting about 120.5, 121 right in those levels. And they originally thought we could go down to about 115 or so. So if we get up to a level of, say, 140 on the euro-dollar relationship, you're talking about a 15-20% move in that currency. So if you're a holder of any investment denominated in euros, and you have a 15% rise in that currency, and you're collecting a dividend, and you get a little bit of a move in the actual stock, you can start to take a look and see how some of these clients of ours have been I've been very happy with what's going on. So a lot of what will help our clients is when we have the currencies moving our direction. And over the long term, and Peter talks about this, there's nowhere for the dollar to go but much, much lower. But if you take a look at, and again, this is why I want to point out the Elliott Wave people, because they don't look at the fundamentals. They don't really care that we're accumulating $900 billion trade deficits. They don't care that... there's a lot of, you can go down the line, I guess there's too many economic numbers, there's too many problems in the U.S., but if you take a look at the fundamental or the technical side of this, they're looking at the same things based on technical analysis. So that's just kind of another way to look at that. I'll give you two quick others before I go to break. One other is another area that maybe I'll talk about afterward as well, but the New Zealand dollar is, New Zealand is a country that we've been very involved in, and we find terrific dividends. New Zealand's one of those countries that really rewards shareholders by paying high dividends, and they're known for that. There are some negatives. It's a smaller country, but typically they're very responsible. They have a short-term interest rate at 7%, which means they're a country that wants to maintain a non-inflationary environment, so they maintain very high interest rates. But what we've witnessed recently is a lot of borrowing that was going on in Japan, and a lot of, let's say, hedge fund money, a lot of money that uses leverage. They were borrowing money in Japan and at almost zero interest rates. Japan has had near zero interest rates for many, many years. So if you're the average hedge fund, and you go to Japan and you borrow at, say, 15 basis points, which is nothing, and you're borrowing in a currency that's actually been slightly weak recently, where you're borrowing at almost nothing, but the currency's declining slightly, it means that they're giving you money for free. And a lot of these hedge funds, a lot of these large pools of money have been using that, borrowing in Japan, and buying things like New Zealand securities, like Australian government securities. And I think a lot of that is going on in our country right now, meaning a lot of this borrowed money in yen or in Japan has been coming to continue to fuel our purchases of 10-year treasuries and 5-year treasuries. That's not a bad trade when you can find a currency that's actually rising, which the U.S. dollar has been in the short term, and borrowing in a currency that's been slightly declining. So it's been a very popular place to be, to say the least. So this is one of these currencies and one of these countries where, in New Zealand, we've had a lot of this now begin to unwind. And when you start to get the New Zealand dollar, just to put this in a number sense, and a lot of our clients are involved in these stocks, and if you look at the positions, they've actually gone up in the last 6 to 9 months. But the problem is that the New Zealand dollar, I'd say in the last 60 days or so, has come down from a level of about 71 cents to sitting now at about 62.5 cents. So you're looking at about a 9% pullback in that currency, even though some of our positions have gone up a little bit. And all of this is the same effect. It's an unwinding of a lot of purchasing of, you know, a relatively small amount of government securities, and now a lot of that is unwinding. So, you know, we think we're getting to levels, and where I'm heading with this is the Elliott Wave people are looking at a very strong support range of the 62-63 cent level. We're right around those levels where we're starting to see quite a bit of buying come in, and if you kind of pay attention to New Zealand, Australia, those countries, we're getting a lot of equity buying, a lot of, and I heard a report today on Bloomberg where a lot of mining stocks in Australia are being accumulated because as commodity prices get cheaper in Australian dollars, in other words, as their currency comes down a little bit, it's a lot cheaper to buy commodities in those countries. So you're seeing tremendous gains in stock prices in some of these areas because as they get cheap, people are recognizing opportunity. And again, in our way of thinking, there are times when there are some nice opportunities that are created, and a lot of our clients understand that. And I've talked to some terrific and very smart clients of mine that are always looking for areas and looking for times to add a little bit of money. So in terms of New Zealand, the Elliott Wave people, they think down at this 61, 62 cent level, they've got terrific support, and they're looking for another very nice rise here. And we're coming off of this level, which they did a nice job predicting that we'd get down to these levels. And this is, again, this is technically, this is not fundamental. So, but I just wanted to make those handful of points, natural gas, New Zealand, and talk about our dollar and talk about the technical side of it and just give you an idea of, aside from the fundamentals, which I think we all agree the fundamentals are not shaping up to look at all satisfactory. So, and anyway, I'm going to go ahead and take one more break and I'll come back for the last segment of the show.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I am back one more time. Again, this is John Catalfio, and I am pinch hitting for Peter Schiff, who is on his way as we speak to Singapore to present at the Asian Mining Conference. In fact, I believe the show kicks off in a few days. Peter wanted to get over there a bit early and I think take a look around. We do own some positions in Singapore. It's one of our favorite currencies and one of our favorite countries. And again, like everything we do at Euro Pacific, we're trying to find safe ways to buy things in Singapore that are very defensive where we can get a terrific dividend. But I'm sure Peter's going to go and turn over some stones and take a look around Singapore and find out if there's anything interesting on the, I'd say on the dividend side in Singapore. But again, Let me give out the numbers of my office here as well as the number to call in. And I know I haven't maybe encouraged as many call-ins as Peter. I just had a handful of things that I wanted to talk about and a few more here. So, but if you'd like to call in and you have a question, you can call 888-678-9597. And we do have brokers available. I'm calling here from the Valley of the Sun in Phoenix, and the number here is 1-800-727-6435, and there are brokers available. A couple of notes, and I just want to a couple things about this week. And a lot of our clients get a lot of emails. They read a lot of things on various websites. But according to some experts, this week could have been the end of the world. There were a couple of very big events that went on this week. And sadly, I'm going to be the first one to officially announce the retirement of one of our oldest friends of all time, the M3, or the money supply numbers that the U.S. government continues to take these numbers higher and higher and higher. And don't kid yourself, folks, we're raising interest rates in this country. In fact, we're at 4.5% on our short rates. But money is pouring into the system. And again, this is one of these things that Peter loves to talk about. But the reality is that even though interest rates are higher, and by raising rates, they're trying to decrease the supply of money in the system. Well, let me give you these numbers because, again, the government announced about a month ago or a short time ago that they're not going to release M3, and that's the measure of money supply of M1 and M2. They're not going to release these data after the 23rd. So starting tomorrow, I guess you'll have to stand in front of the Federal Reserve with a calculator and figure it out yourself. But here are the numbers. Here are the closing numbers. And I'll give you something to compare it to. 1 year ago, the money supply in this country was measured at $9.5 trillion. $9.5 trillion. That's the M3 money supply. And in this last year, we've raised rates, what, 7 times? We've gone from maybe a year ago this time, we were at 1.5%, maybe 2%. Well, now here we are at 4.5% on our short-term interest rates, and we're actually at $10.4 trillion in the money supply. So let me go over that one more time. From $9.5 trillion to $10.4 trillion. That's exactly 8.6% higher than a year ago. Again, which blows me away because I think the whole point of trying to raise interest rates is to take money out of the system. But we've taken the money supply up almost 9% in the last 12 months. And remember that number, folks. It's actually $10.360 trillion. That's the last number you're going to see. There might be one more released, but that's going to be the last M3 number that you're going to see, and they're going to retire that number. And then one more number I'll give you, and I have a caller on the line, but one more number I want to give you, and this is another important event. We actually got right up to the debt statutory, they call it the Treasury statutory debt limit. So the amount of debt in our country, the limit is $8.18 trillion. That's been the limit for, oh, I'm not sure exactly how many months. But we're that compares to, well, let's see. I'll give you some other numbers that give you a better perspective. Right now, with that 8.18, we've had to raise the debt limit ceiling. But before we raised it, we're now at $8.27 trillion in debt. So we're actually above that debt limit ceiling by, looks like about $100 billion. And the question is, well, where does that compare to a year ago? A year ago this time, we were at $7.7 trillion in outstanding debt in this country. We're now at $8.3 trillion and counting. That's about a 7% rise from a year ago. So these are numbers that you know, again, our debt's rising at an alarming rate, and wait until interest rates start to rise. Wait until we actually, it costs us more money to service this debt. I read a number that we're at $250 billion and counting from the war in Iraq, and I don't think that's looking like it's going to end anytime soon. So there are some enormous numbers. And let me give you one of the scariest numbers that I've read recently. In fact, let me find the sheet. It talked about our debt if we actually looked at unfunded liabilities. And we're looking at, what did I say, about a little over $8 trillion in total debt. A lot of people project, if you look at Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, a lot of those unfunded liabilities going forward, they call them unfunded obligations, their estimates as high as $98 $1 trillion. That's with a T, $1 trillion. So again, these are all reasons why, and we're going to continue to preach, and I'm going to do the same, that whether you believe us or not, whether you think we're crazy or whether you think we're smart enough and we should be the ones you should have all your money with, it's at least worth a phone call to give us a buzz. Let one of our brokers talk to you about the things that we do. And again, Peter makes this comment over and over. The worst part about this is if this all plays out the way that a lot of people expect, like us, and you knew about it but did nothing about it, that's the worst part. The people who have no idea and have no clue, the people buying their third or fourth home right now, you can go down the line. The people who bought those dot-com stocks in 2000 right at the peak, they have no clue. And those kind of people, you really can't blame because they just have no idea. But the people that listen, the people that are smart enough, and our clients are very sophisticated. We're not getting, I would say, off-the-wall clients that, again, there's a lot of ways to analyze, but our clients are very sophisticated investors that are looking for a place to get out of the U.S. to localize the investments, and gold, precious metals. There are a lot of ways to get out of the dollar and find ways to really protect yourself against runaway inflation, and that's ultimately where we're going to head. But let's go ahead, and I apologize for Rebecca from Las Vegas is on the line. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, John. This is Rebecca, yeah. I get my real quick question before I make my comment is, what comes after a trillion? And I'm speaking of hyperinflation. But anyway, I like natural gas in here because it's at the point where it was before it took off last year. And I think, you know, with all the inflation that's been going on and with possibilities of it being cut off again, that how many people wouldn't want to, you know, kick themselves last year? Man, I should have invested in natural gas. Why didn't I?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. You really have to, you have to look at the opportunity side of any investment. And, and I hate to say this, but a lot of investors love to buy things at their absolute peak. And I know in November, December, when gas was at its high level and it looked like it was running away, a lot of clients wanted to buy things then. We do a good job of, trying to evaluate everything. But you're absolutely right on, Rebecca. These are the kind of opportunities where, 5 years from now, natural gas is going to be a very difficult commodity to come by, and go down the line and say 10, 15, 20 years. It's just a terrific place. And I always make these comments to clients and say, if I can start with a 12, 13, 14% dividend in a currency like the Canadian dollar, which we love Canada. Canada's got a budget surplus, it's got a trade surplus, and they have the largest, it might be stuck in the mud, but they've got the largest collection of oil outside of Saudi Arabia. I like Canada, and I take my chances on the Canadian dollar versus the U.S. dollar. So when you start with a 14%, 13, 14% yield in Canada, and then in a better currency, in any investment, I'd like that as a starting point. Again, I'll take my chances on those kind of investments. So
same here. And one thing I heard, I think it was yesterday, that they're trying to talk down the Canadian dollar because it did lose like a penny or something. So, I mean, you're getting a double whammy here, I think. So I really like Canada too. So.
You got it, absolutely. And unfortunately, I believe the Canadian dollar has been held hostage by the price of oil, and that it's too closely correlated right now. And when we see a pullback now, we're back up to 62 and change. But when oil pulled back a lot, I think you saw some profit taking, some selling in the Canadian dollar again, because it's so closely tied to the price of oil right now. And that's unfortunate, but we're getting a nice opportunity in that as well. So
it's a buying opportunity.
In fact, Rebecca, I'm going to go ahead and steal. This is an individual that I spoke with earlier today. In fact, Rebecca, I want to make a comment that you brought up earlier today and that I believe thoroughly. They talk about oil companies. They talk about windfall profits. And how these oil companies should give some of it back and all the money that they're making. And we talked about this earlier, but what about the brokerage firms? And you brought up this point with Goldman Sachs, and I believe that. You talk about the enormous amount of money that these brokerage firms are making from what? Last year, in my eyes, in everybody's eyes, and if you own U.S. stocks, you know this, you barely made money. If you made 2% in the U.S. last year, you actually did okay. So how can these major brokerages, these Goldman Sachs, how can they walk away Again, with 40, what was the Goldman Sachs pool of bonuses? Do you recall?
No, they're in the millions.
20 actually was a 20-some billion dollars. But again, there's a tremendous amount of money made. And I understand investment banking. I understand about some of the ways that they make their money. But again, these are all at the cost of the U.S. investor. This comes from somewhere. It's not created out of thin air. And all these firms do, I think, right now are moving money back and forth. And if you're an investor and you're not making money as an investor of Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley, and you watch this firm walk away with the highest level of profits in many, many years, you've got to scratch your head. So we talked about that earlier today. Mm-hmm. But hey, thank you for the call, Rebecca. I've only got a few minutes to go here, but thank you very much for the call, and I look forward to talking to you again, actually, shortly.
Okay, you got it.
Thank you again. Okay, let's see if there's anything that that I missed. I've got a handful of minutes to go here, and I'm not sure if I'll have another opportunity for another caller. But I do have one more terrific sheet of some numbers that I want to go ahead and read here. But this was a CNN Money article from it's about a week old, but I don't think a week old is that much outdated. But it talks about the affordability of housing around the country, and it lists the highest 299 markets and really talked about where housing affordability is, and it goes market by market. So I'll give you some of the highlights, and I'll do this quickly because we only have a few minutes, but just know that California and Florida accounted for 18 of the 20 top overvalued markets, and again, these are measures of mortgage rates versus incomes. There's a lot of metrics that go into this, but essentially it's how affordable is that market. And I highlighted a few of these, and I'll go down the line. Atlantic City is 59.6% overvalued. Bakersfield, California, 62.4%. Bellingham, Washington, 48.6% overvalued. How about Boise City, Idaho? Again, not really in the Sunshine Belt. 21.5% overvalued. Going down the line here, and I highlighted a few of these. How about Duluth, Minnesota, and Wisconsin? I guess that's a border town. 30.7% overvalued. Grand Junction, Colorado. Again, another area in the heart of our country and not on the coast that a lot of people claim are the biggest bubble areas. Grand Junction, Colorado, 36% overvalued. Honolulu, 35.5% overvalued, but Naples, Florida was number one on this list. So if you live in Naples, Florida, as soon as we're done here, I'd contact your realtor immediately and see if you can leave the, I don't want to call it a burning building, but I'd certainly see if you could find a buyer as quickly as possible. Naples, Florida, 96.3% overvalued based on affordability. The average home price in Naples, Florida, you ask, is $367,000. And let's see if there's any others in here. San Jose, 50%. Most of the California numbers you'd expect to look like this. Vero Beach, Florida, 58.7. But again, the point is that we talk about things that are going to be the catalyst to start the dollar down in motion, to take money out of the consumer's hands in this country. And right now, our GDP, when we measure our country and how fast we're growing, 70-some percent, I think 71, 72% of our country and our growth is from consumption. That's from the consumer spending money, and that's it. It's not from making things. It's not from services and so on. So, again, when we're at a 72% consumption to continue to fuel our economy, these are the kind of things we look at. Peter talks about this all the time. But when you look at home prices, especially affordability, these are all real numbers, and these are all indexes that have been calculated for years and years. So, if you're going to move to Naples, Florida right now, are you going to buy a home or are you going to rent a home? So these are all reasons why I think housing inventories have never been higher. There's a lot of homes on the market. And again, these are all going to contribute to the consumer not having the ability to continue to consume and spend. And therefore, what we're going to see is we're going to start to see the downturn that we've talked about in our economy. Ultimately, the U.S. dollar has got to come unwound from these very, very high levels based on all these factors. And again, let's see if there's anything else that I left off. Now, I think I've pretty much gone over a lot of the material that I had available. There's a couple other tidbits here and there that I'll save for next week. But once again, let me remind you that go to our website. It's www.europac.net. That's EUROPAC.net. There's loads of information, and as I mentioned at the very beginning, we have one of the best lists of articles right on our homepage that talk about all these things. There's an article.